Hey, I'm Dr. Z, and I'm a neurosurgeon. So that means long hours, early rounds, late nights, and everything in between. And through it all, I wear FIGS because they're built for what I do. Through the chaos, through the hours, and through whatever the day throws at me, they do their job so I can do mine. They're comfortable when it counts and functional when I need them the most. So where do you wear your FIGS? On shift, on call, on the couch in the break room, listening to this podcast, wherever it is, they fit right in. And now listeners of this podcast can get 15% off their first order. Just head to wearfigs.com and use code FIGSRX at checkout. That's wearfigs.com, code FIGSRX.
This is the Hidden Killers podcast with Tony Bruschi.
Featuring former FBI special agent and chief of the Counterintelligence Behavioral Analysis Program, Robin Dreeke.
When the night comes falling, a requiem for the Idaho student murders, a brand new book by New York Times bestselling artist Howard Blum, a man who's done many, many amazing books, a very good investigative journalist. And it really is, it's raising more questions. It's bringing back to light some of the things that we've talked about over the last year and a half in the case against Koberger. Joining me to discuss, Robin Dreeke, retired FBI special agent, chief of the Counterintelligence Behavioral Analysis Program. I know you have started to get into the book. I have done cliff notes and watched a lot of his interviews about it. I can't wait to start reading this thing. Just off the bat, what have been some of your takeaways since you've kind of started to get into this?
So, one, it's a good story. He's a great writer. You know, I read a lot of biographies. I read a lot of history. Yeah. I read a lot of nonfiction. And as a writer, it was easy to see why he's a Pulitzer Prize nominee. It's really well written. He's a great storyteller because this is what it is. He wrote it as a biography of not just an individual, because it's like multiple biographies at once. He mm-hmm. tells a story of the father. He tells a story of the students. He tells a story of Koberger. Anyone involved, he's kind of painting a picture. So as a behaviorist, what I'm getting from this is I haven't gotten anything new. I'm about halfway through. I haven't gotten anything new about the case that mm-hmm. we haven't seen already, that you and I haven't talked about and analyzed and have our conjecture about. What he does a really good job of, he paints a behavior arc, which I love, behavior arcs from the individuals that are involved. So kind of give backstories as he's telling these stories. And from there, my only other question I have is why, you know, mm-hmm. what's his purpose in writing the book? Because it is a bit out of his normal writing as an author. You know, he writes a lot about another great history historian. He writes a lot about that. But I was just curious about why he seemed to be in a rush to get this out. I don't have the answer, but you've listened to interviews of him before, so maybe you have a better answer than I do.
Interesting because typically he does, you know, kind of, you know, biographical, you know, pieces of things that have kind of already settled themselves. This is still up in the air. I mean, we don't even have a trial date yet. Koberger is innocent until proven guilty. And so there's so many questions there about the case itself. You know, before we, you know, is this a little bit cart before the horse? I don't know. But there certainly is a lot of conjecture in this book and a lot of assumptions that are made. But a lot of things, you know, based on conversations that he had. It wasn't just like he scanned a bunch of news articles and here, let's write a book. Some people have done that. He got in there. He talked to a lot of people. And I think one of the biggest points from what I could understand about the book is the conversations that he had with people who knew the dad of Brian Koberger. Yeah. This is the man who flew out to Moscow, Idaho, when Brian first started out there and first started teaching out there. The man who, you know, kind of took him around a little bit and even said to a neighbor, and I'm just kind of paraphrasing here, like, hey, you know, he has a hard time making friends. If you wouldn't mind, you know, hey, you know, play with my kid, basically, who's a 28-year-old man. You know, kind of weird to be doing that at that age. There might be. So there's a lot of signs here that dad knew something was up. I believe he even allowed his son to be arrested or charged earlier on with
he called cops on him.
Yeah, calling the cops when he stole his sister's cell phone. So the family does seem to have some red flags about their son, knowing he's a little bit off, maybe at times in terms of behavior. And he also, I know, talks about that drive and talks about the drive when he flew out again to go get his son to bring him back. Again, take your 20-year-old son back for Thanksgiving. I know, I mean, I don't know. I'm a dad. You're a dad. If my kid said, hey, it's going to be a long drive, I'd go do it. I would certainly go do it. I didn't take that as being super odd, but you could tell there was something up with that drive, especially with them getting pulled over twice in a row. And from what it sounds like, there was some conjecture in there from folks he talked to about his son and kind of some red flags.
Yeah, it fit a narrative about the dad that I immediately felt at the very beginning, because when you look at Koberger's background, his battle with meth in high school and being a drug addict and recovering from that, he lost one of the girls that was dealing drugs. She died from an overdose prior to an arrest she had, and this is all in high school.
Yeah.
The dad's got a lot of guilt. In the book, they highlight how he was a high school custodian. Not high school. I'm not sure what grade level, but he's a school custodian. Mm-hmm. Had to claim bankruptcy twice, and so he never felt he could provide. And he was the harsh one out of the two parents, you know, on the kids trying to, you know, help them better themselves, kind of. So you really feel for the dad in the sense of, you know, he's trying his hardest to be a good dad, and so it fit the dad's behavior throughout what I saw. So far from the trial, not trial yet, but so far from the investigation and what we know and from the book as well, dad's behavior is fit in a behavior arc, very consistent. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Lots of warning flags that went up though.
Want to listen ad-free? Want advanced access to all of our interviews before anyone else?
Become a True Crime Today Premium Plus subscriber on Apple Podcasts.
You get every episode commercial free,
so you can binge on true crime
until you can binge no more.
Search True Crime Today Premium Plus on Apple Podcasts now, or go to our podcast page and sign up now.
More of the Hidden Killers podcast next.